Howdy, podcast fans. I'm here with my mother and your favorite podcast host, Barbara Bray. Hello, Mom.
Hi, Andrew.
We're always doing this via Zoom because, you know, we live in the future now. But we recently got to hang out in person, and I got to watch my mom have a rethinking learning conversation with my year and a half old son. So they were doing a lot of conversing on the ground and playing with you know, puppets and dolls. Not quite right for this audience.
Oh, I don't know. I think we all have kids. That's why people like to listen, but I can't help it. He's just so darling. I could, I love it. And I would do it any, if I could, as much as I could, you know.
Well, what you don't get to see, everybody, is, you know, yeah, my mom, Barbara, does these really deep conversations with these insightful questions. And what I got to see was, "Boo, boo, papa, do you like the monkey?" And all these fun, fun doll, check out the teddy bear. And they were having a blast. So it's, again, wasn't podcast worthy, but it definitely made my week.
Well, the best thing is I could pretend like I was falling down and he couldn't see me, and then I pop back up.
well, we won't subject everybody to that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
But with that in mind, what would you like to tell our audiences about the upcoming conversation we're going to listen to?
Oh yeah, this is someone I've known for 20 years or so. I can't even remember how long, but it's Kevin Honeycutt. Kevin and I we've been friends forever, and I don't know why we waited so long, but it actually was perfect timing. He's doing so many amazing things. And I decided to go back and look at my photos in 2010. I was on the floor playing with my iPad and with all the other people. We were doing an orchestra. He was leading us with the music, and I found some pictures of it. He's so cool. He's an amazing presenter. He's done things with teachers all over the world, but now starting to work with kids. And I'm glad he's going to be sharing that in our story, in the podcast, because he's so much fun to listen to. So I can't wait for people to hear him. It's Kevin Honeycutt. I just think he's great.
Strap your seatbelts on, folks. This is going to be an energetic one with Barbara Bray and Kevin Honeycutt.
Hi, everyone. Yes, this is Barbara Bray, and I'm so excited about having Kevin Honeycutt here. Do you know I've known Kevin for, gosh, Kevin, I think it's been 25 years or so.
Right. Where did the time go?
I don't know. I just love that you're here with me on my virtual porch.
First, thanks for letting me do this. There's nobody I love more. You've always been that lightning bug just off the porch that makes you want to leave the porch and run out into the wet grass in your bare feet. You're that person, you know?
And no one's ever said that.
There's a lot of specific words there. I think the best people in our lives are like lightning bugs. And, you know, the more we have, the less dark it is, you know?
Do you know that I grew up on the East Coast, and I used to put lightning bugs, I call them fireflies, I put them in a jar. I used to just love that. And then when I moved to the West Coast, to California, they don't have lightning bugs anymore.
I know, it's strange, right? I go back to Kansas, and man, in the right kind of summer night, at the right part of summer, it's intoxicating how many there are. Remember when you were a kid and they light up and you have this brief moment to catch one. And then the minute the light goes out, it's dark and you can't see them. So there's this timing, and there's so much about that timing that's this life, right? That we have to grab things while they're lit up or they go dark.
So I'm going to grab this opportunity to introduce you to my audience now that I'm a lightning bug and I've lit up. Ooh, you're so cute. So Kevin Honeycutt, is that okay that I start, you know, boasting about you just a little bit? Is that okay?
I will endure it.
All right. Kevin Honeycutt is a technology integrationist, a staff developer, a musician, and a songwriter. Wow. Okay, I just got to stop for a minute. I have a picture of us sitting on the floor at ISTE when it was NEC a long time ago. And I was playing the drums on the iPad or whatever it was then. Mm-hmm. And you had us all in a concert in the middle of the floor.
I remember going to all those ISTEs, and my angle was always that, hey, guys and girls, don't forget the fun. I know there's a lot of techie stuff here. There's a lot of coding. There's a lot of programming. There's a lot of wonderful things. But don't forget, these are the musical instruments of our time, and that we don't have to be Juilliard trained to make music. So here we are doing this crazy ad hoc little, it wasn't even about the music. It was about believing that that was okay. And I know there are purists on the periphery going, what is he up to? What is his shtick? They're looking for the snake oil. And I'm saying, no, I'm just saying, let's laugh at ourselves a little bit and make sure we have an open heart when it comes to this kind of change.
Well, this is one reason why I wanted you on my show, because I mean, I'm just going to continue with my little boasting about you. I know you've worked with teachers and students in 49 states, but you've also been to Puerto Rico. You've keynoted in Norway, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Barcelona, New Zealand, London, Manila, Canada, and Australia, and more. I mean, you've been all over the place.
You know, it's terrifying in so many ways. As that was happening, it's a blur. And you know, you've traveled all over and you've written on the world with beautiful ink. But you know, those first times you do those things, you're terrified. You're just thinking, am I equal to this? Why am I here? I mean, that little voice inside can talk you out of it. And you got to constantly remember, no, wait a minute. I've been brought here by life and providence and God and the person who hired me. To bring my colors to this place. And then you get brave at the last minute. You know how that happens? You just kind of get bigger than you are. And I always think I'll stay this big. And that way, when I go to Hong Kong next week, I'll start this confident. But no, every single time for me, I'm just as scared and just as humbled. And I think that's important, right? To understand how important it is to bring something real and relevant to the people you're talking to. When you've got four interpreters, because in Hong Kong, I had someone for Hindi, someone for Chinese, someone for Japanese, someone for, what was the last one?
Chinese is, there's Mandarin and Cantonese. So do you have different?
All I know is there were four and not all of them were fast. Some of them took longer to interpret. And can you imagine trying to follow me? Even people who are doing sign language with me, I wear them out. They have to work in shifts because I'm manic. I'm talking as fast as Robin Williams and they just look at me like, are you kidding me? but how much fun is it to get to do that? And you know what you find out? I know you found this out, is that educators and students are the same everywhere in the world. It's not like there's some secret code here. Teachers are overworked, underpaid, and love their kids and will do anything to make their kids' lives better. And kids are just trying to grow up and find their way in this world. Nothing has changed in a way. You know, you and I are still freshmen. Just we're older. We look in the mirror and go, huh, who is that? That's not.
That experience you have has, let's say you've molded it now. That's the thing about you. In fact, you just started, I think in 2021, you and your wife started your own company, Honeycutt Consulting. And that right there, I mean, they get you. They really get all of you. And that's why, you know, I can't even believe that I haven't had you on my show before, because I've known you for so long, and it's meant so much to me, our relationship. And it's like memory lane, going down memory lane, just seeing you and talking about these things. So I'm so glad you're here.
Isn't that the fun? When we started talking about having this podcast, I just, for grins and giggles, opened up my iPhoto library, which is probably, 300,000 photos.
Oh, no.
And I could just put in ISTE or put in Denver or put in and then up in Ann Arbor, once it knows you and it's got your face down, then suddenly I can just go back in time and back and back and back and back and back. And in every case, there you are. There you are right there, you know, like we're in recording studios and we're the Beatles and there you are.
Oh,
and
I don't and know go, about that.
Going all the way back. And I think you've been, what I think is nice about you is that you've always been a cheerleader, but you're also on the team, you know, and it's not everybody like that. Some people are so busy being rock stars and I love them. But they seldom step onto the sidelines and grab a pom pom. I've never seen you without a pom-pom in your hand. You are so giving and so generous to so many. And I don't know if they all remember when they grow up that you were there. I can't forget. And you're in my pictures. So anyway, it's been fun rewinding, you know?
I'm going to do that on mine now and looking for you now because that's so cool.
It's crazy because you go, I didn't even know we knew each other then. But there she is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Philadelphia.
That's right.
You know,
and my there gosh. She is. And don't put that picture up.
What?
I'm being silly. Hey, so fun. You talk about me. I want to talk about your why. That's kind of what I'm doing now is... There's a purpose for you to be here, and your why means a lot. So can you share that?
Yes. So I'm looking at your book right now, Define Your Why. That is my next read. Because if you have distilled that down into something I can read on a flight, I'm sure going to put that in my hands. And I know that's I can go on Amazon and get that, right?
Yes, I probably
define.
Would.
It's called Define Your Why. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Anyway, not trying to do a pitch. I'm just saying I am very interested in at our ages, you know, we start to really culminate things and put things together and come up with these coherent threads of thought. And I'm sure yours is tasty, but let me get to my why. Okay. Because,
yes.
You know, you go back and you become a spelunker, an archaeologist of yourself. If you live long enough, that happens. And I know there are touchstone moments in our lives when we have a health issue or a loved one is in some trouble. And these moments take us all the way back. And we start to ask ourselves that same question. What is my why? Why am I not giving up right now? Why am I enduring this course of treatment? How do I remain who I am in the face of all of this? So this is really, really important. And I think for every educator right now, after COVID, we're kind of living in this, I'm just going to say, this surreal kind of post-apocalyptic place where people are surviving. And my son characterizes it as a Star Wars moment. Remember when they called in on the Death Star and Han Solo answers the phone and goes, situation normal. And the situation is not normal. It's not normal. Teachers are covering classes. They don't have a planning period. Administrators are back in the classroom because we have teacher shortages. There's no time, right? There's no time. And so everyone's doing their best. Kids aren't coming back in the numbers they were. And kids have some mental health issues and there's depression and untreated, you know, and unresolved issues and some PTSD. And all of that is happening to people we love. So I think we have to find our strength. We have to find our strength because if we're going to walk onto that battlefield and say we're helping, we better have our armor in place. And armor isn't about anesthetizing yourself from pain or from feeling. It's about having enough strength to help. And so what is our armor? And to me, that's our why, right? How do we cover all those spots? And so what does that look like? Is it Kevlar? You know, what is it made of? So you go back and you say, what, why haven't I given up? Why haven't I? And it all started for me way, 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 way back when I was probably 3 or 4 years old, growing up in poverty and growing up in pretty desperate situations. My father had some issues and he was an alcoholic and kind of a bit of a sociopath and in and out of jail a lot. And so, you know, we're the byproducts of that childhood. And always on the move, always moving. Every time Dad messed up, and it's the name of my book, Midnight Run, is what Dad would literally say. You know, you'd be at this new school, you signed up for free lunches, you got your first free lunch, you're relatively happy. Not everyone made fun of you yet because of the clothes you have. Mm-hmm. You know, tomorrow's another day. Good Christian kids can do evil things. And, you know, you're living with all of that, pushing it down. How do you operate? Where do you find your strength? And for me, it was creativity. you know, I'd moved to a new school. I'm the new kid again. I'm going to be in a fight at recess with somebody because I stepped on someone's toes accidentally. I try to be the funny guy because the other funny guy or funny girl, they don't fight, they joke. So comedians are great people to hang out with. No matter how mad they get, the most they're going to do is tell a joke about you. So that's safe. And the other art kids might draw a caricature of you, but they don't usually stab you with a pencil. So the arts is a safe place to hang out and find out who you are. So wherever school I went to, I had a sketchbook or at least a notebook or a three-ring binder, and I would do sketches. And every school had not seen my sketches yet. So I would keep working on drawing, and I'd keep thinking, I'll keep getting better at this. And before long, kids would say, oh my God, the new kid can draw. I had something. I had something on day one. And then I found theater. Oh my God, I found theater. And suddenly, oh my God, you know, even though I have, even though I have ADHD, can you tell already?
Yes.
If Robin Williams and Joe Pesci had a love child, it would be me. And so, I mean, I'm manic and I can't help it. And before there was Adderall, you know, I just go, go, go. And I could drive some teachers crazy. Other teachers who were grown up versions of me, they loved me. They saw me, they nurtured me. They protected me, even though I sometimes could get them in trouble during the walkthrough evaluation because I was a wild card. I wasn't bad. I was just a little unpredictable. And there were, you don't forget the people who loved you anyway. You don't forget the people who saw what you might become and nurtured that even without any evidence. See, you remember that and you swallow that down and think, oh my God, you don't even know what you're going to do with it. And then, oh my God, when you come full circle and become that first year teacher and think, oh, it's my turn. It's my classroom. Those kids are in my classroom and they come walking in. Let me tell you, can I tell you a story that happened just a few days ago?
Sure. I mean, I'm just loving all of this.
Well, this goes back to the why. And I didn't even know I was doing this. Back then when you're a young teacher, you don't even know why yet. And that's why I'm glad you're asking that question. And sometimes it's too soon for you to know. Mm-hmm. I get that. Well, it's not too soon now. I'm 57 years old and I get a phone call from a girl and she says, my brother needs to talk to you. And I remember him. I remember him. He was in my first class of kids. And man, I don't know anything. I'm just this wide-eyed teacher. And my biggest fear is I'm an imposter and they're going to find out that I probably shouldn't have gone to college. You know, that I'm dyslexic and I've got some learning disabilities. And now I'm a teacher. I'm a colorblind art teacher. Just sum me up like that. I don't know, but I don't know what I can't see, and I can teach other kids to see, even though they might not be able to see. I don't realize that my biggest weakness is my biggest strength waiting to be shared with kids. I've got this kid in my class, and I think he's confident. Well, here's my mistake. He's confident in my class because I build a space where everyone can be confident on purpose, you know, accidentally, but on purpose. I build a safe space, and he's in there. And this started on Instagram. He hit me on Instagram with a DM and he starts with pictures of the certificates I made him back then. You know, there's no software. I'm making certificates for my students with calligraphy pens and I do calligraphy and they would look all like royal pronouncements of how amazing this child is and how grateful I am to have him in the kingdom of my classroom. And he's nearing 50. He's almost 50. That's how old I am now. And this is what he's showing me, that he still has these pictures of these certificates that I gave him. And he says to me, Mr. Honeycutt, you saved my life. He said, I had nothing then, and I was being bullied. My sister was being bullied. Here they are in a Christian school being bullied by the kids who are leaders in youth group, and I see it over and over and over. If I had a nickel for every kid who's gotten back with me and told me about the PTSD of mean culture and what it did to them. And he says, here's the most important thing that you have to tell every teacher. Every kid needs to be seen and feel seen. He said, that's what your class did for me. Mm-hmm. You let me be seen. He's been through all kinds of trials and tribulations. And it's not just him. I can name 10 more. I started a Facebook group just to try to get all of these refugees back together again so that we could compare notes. Because we get to a place in life, and we talked about this pre-show, where we're taking a bit of an inventory. I know we're older. I know we've got pain. I know we've got limitations, but we've also got strengths. You take an inventory and say, okay, what do I do with what's left? Are you doing some of that? What do I do with what's left? What's still in the tank? I've got gas in the tank, and I know that my engine misfires from time to time, even backfires from time to time. And I have lactose intolerance, a lot of backfiring lately. But what can we do anyway? So I think it starts with you and I going back and saying, what did we do? Now, how do we anoint, appoint, disjoint the next generation of teachers to make sure that among all the other concerns and digital literacies and financial literacy and career and tech ed and world of work and all the wonderful things and the AI, all the things that we can do, how do we make sure at the foundation of all of that, that every kid feels seen, that our teachers still have that empathy, not sympathy, empathy, to reach out and build up those kids who almost are, you know,
almost are. Oh, that's really, so you help them become.
What your faith becomes theirs. We ride on kids. You know, we are their surrogate self-belief until they find their own. All of us have had that moment where someone else's belief in us was bigger than ours. And our belief in their belief in us, it's the strangest thing, but it becomes our belief, but not overnight, because you've been told in a world that points its finger at your sternum and digs in as they tell you that you're not what you think you are and you're never going to be anything. And, you know, for every great voice, there's other ones. And how do we teach kids to put on the armor that deflects the evil and the mean and the negative and only lets in? Maybe it has a heart-shaped hole that only love can enter. Because once it gets inside the armor, it bangs around and causes all kinds of self-doubt. So how do we teach them to yes, wear their armor, but don't keep out love. Don't keep out beautiful people. Learn to find them. They're out there. There are teachers out there. I meet them in every crowd. You've seen them in the front row, leaning forward, saying, oh my God, he's talking about me. Oh my God, he's talking about me. And then you walk up. They walk up to you and say, Barbara. And they're crying and their mascara is running. And they say, Barbara, you just told my life. You just told my life. I had one lady one time, she said, you know, I've been teaching for 30 years and I'm going to retire. And I realize I've been shoplifting from kids. Somewhere along the way, I stopped believing.
Ooh.
But because you were here today, I'm getting back on the horse. I'm going to do this. That's one. Another teacher in Texas. This is a guy. He said, can I drive you to the airport? And I'm like, I'm in a rural school. And I'm thinking he's going to take me out on the farm, make beef jerky out of me. Cause I don't know. I don't know him. He wants to drive me to the airport. Sounds like, you know, a Netflix series starting. And on the way, he said, you have no idea. He said, you have no idea. I wasn't even going to come to orientation. My letter of resignation is in my pocket. I was just going to quit this morning. He said, I don't know why. But I sat down in the front row over on my stage right side. He said, and I listened to you. He said, and I cried. And I don't cry when I cried. He said, and now I'm not going to quit. I'm going to give it one more year because I can't give up because you were here today. And I'm crying because I'm a softy. And I'm like, this is why I do what I do. This is why you and I are here, why you're calling me on the microphone. And bringing me out.
You know, okay, we weren't even going to go into this yet, but I just love this. I mean, it's almost like it's like going to church almost. It's like you're sharing what that idea that the reason why we're here isn't just for the kids, it's for the educators, it's for everyone involved in this process. You inspired me and you're still inspiring many. If you're getting this kind of, they want to drive you to the airport and they want to come up and cry in front of you and tell you what you did for them, it's really, it makes me feel proud to know you because I know how you get, when you talk about empathy, you're the one person that shows your vulnerabilities. You show the inside, the outside, you show everything. And that's one of the reasons why I always went to your your keynotes and your speeches. I always tried to be there in the audience so I could kind of support you if I'm there. And what I saw was you told stories. You made a connection with people, especially educators, to make them feel like you just said, he knows me. He knows who I am because he's been there. He understands it. And so, Kevin, that right there is what we need more of. We need to support and be an advocate for our teachers. And I mean, you and I were going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, but you got off on this and now I can't get off of it. It's too good. It's too good.
Let's mine that vein. I think that's fine to go where the conversation takes you. You know, we've had a lot of change lately, and I know the nature of the work has changed some. And I think it's the tenor of the conversation. And I think a lot of people are afraid, so afraid of getting in trouble. They're not doing anything. They're just sort of waiting. They wouldn't pee with their pants on fire. And these are good people who know the kids are bleeding. They know that the system is bleeding. And I know some brave leaders who aren't quite as brave right now. They've gone a little radio silent. And I know why. They're living to survive another day. I get it. But the need hasn't gone anywhere. The need has not gone anywhere. So how do you... And you said it's like going to church. Some of my favorite staff development days have been in big districts where their district, their auditorium's not big enough, and they bring in three other districts and they put me in a church. And so I'm at the Baptist church at the pulpit, baby, and I am preaching the word. Because I always feel like if I hadn't been a teacher, I'd have been a preacher. You know, I feel that. I can't turn it off, this thing, this emotional response to this, this task we've been given of developing kids for their futures is a huge responsibility, but I don't think it's complicated. I think the heart informs. And I think the danger is we can give teachers tools and fill their toolbox and make it heavier. And it feels good to get all of those tools. It does. It really does. But without going back and reminding ourselves why we need these tools, why kids need these tools, why it's important to have every tool in the world so that we can empower kids to become what they were meant to be, not what they think they have to be. That combination, that potent combination of why and how. Because you and I, we could do how all day long. That's called training. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us right now don't have time for training. You know, rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic is what it feels like to them right now. But the why has never been more important. You have people come up to you and they say, I'm a bus driver. You make me want to be a teacher. And I say, you are a teacher. You're the first teacher they have every day and the last teacher they see every day. We're all teachers. We're outnumbered by kids and they need everyone. And I mean that everyone, cafeteria ladies who saw that I was hungry and gave me an extra bologna boat. You know, I say bologna boat in a lot of places I go, no one knows what a bologna boat is.
I don't know.
It's trailer park caviar. Here's what it is. In some of the poor districts, you know, bologna is affordable. And so there would be a slice of bologna. Sometimes if it was a fancy district, it would be fried and they would slice a little triangle out of it, you know, and the unfancy districts, it's just a piece of bologna. And then they put mashed potatoes on there and some cheese on top and melt that in the oven and then serve that. And the bologna would be curled up and it tasted like payday at my house. And so, and one of those would be good. But what the cafeteria's ladies must have known is that I was hungry, that I looked hungry, that I was a hungry cat or a hungry dog. And you know that. And so you put food on the porch. They gave me a second bologna boat. They call me Admiral Spuds Bologna of the bologna boat fleet. Because back at home, you know, the only thing in the fridge at home and the only thing that has been in the fridge for the last month is dad's beer in an almost empty jar of mayonnaise. That's home. And so this meal at school is all I get.
Wow.
And so they knew that. They knew that. And there were teachers who fed me not food, but emotional connection. And they knew that. And they fed me bologna boats. And they kept me afloat. Now, could they afford anything expensive? Could they afford steak? No, they got 200 kids to think about. I get it. But they could slide one more bologna boat on my plate. And I survived because of those ladies who got paid nothing. It's the paras, you know, it's the recess attendants. It's the imperfect, perfect people. They're everywhere. And I want to anoint all of them. I was just in San Diego in August and I talked to 3,000 school employees at El Cajon. And I got the bus drivers and the lunch ladies and everybody and the secretaries and everybody and the enthusiasm in the audience when you notice them. Hey, custodians. And they're like, woo! they're rock stars. And that's what I want to do are. Is I want to tell them all. If I'm just talking to teachers, I want to talk to kids too. That's important, right? Talking to it's one thing to talk to the caretakers in a way that's a little bit arrogant if that's all you're doing. I want to talk to the kids. I want them to know that we're all on one team and we can't wait to bask in the glow of their greatness and that we'll wear sunblock.
Okay, so let me ask you about that because I love talking to kids. I think for me, they're so smart and they know so much, but when they're in a classroom, they don't always get to shine. So can you give me an idea of when you actually have these moments with kids? What is it that you do to bring them out? Well, how do you get them inspired? How do you inspire them?
You know, it's just like what you said when you first met me, and it was stories. You know, we are story machines. We inculcate in story. And what I mean is that there's a temporal connection to our learning. Temporal means the passage of time, right? Temporal, time-based. So what happens is as someone's telling a story, time is going by and your brain is marking time. And that way, when you get home and they say, what'd you do in school today? Oh my God, Mrs. Bray told a story. And then they tell the story with perfect fidelity because it was written into their brain with an understanding of the temporal importance, right, of learning. Temporal. Mm-hmm. So stories. I didn't pick stories for no reason. I picked stories because people remember stories. Mm-hmm. So that's what you tell. And I have people 20 years later, I've got students who grew up and say, oh my God, and they'll tell me my story back word for word. From 1991, for gosh sakes. So that's what I do. I tell stories and I tell stories of student success. These are kids I've worked with, kids I know, not just some strange kid or some TED talk or something I saw on a reel, but real, the difference between real and reels, you know, this is a real kid that I know. And he was being bullied and here's what he did. And he went to LA and he got a band together and he ate bologna and he believed, and here he is the night he was on Jimmy Kimmel, and I show them that video, and everyone in that room goes, OMG. Then they come up afterwards. This is the beautiful part. And I know you know this, but I want people to see this. It's all over, and they go back to class, and a handful of kids beg their teacher, can I stay and talk to Mr. Honeycutt? And it's 25 kids, and they're all the unicorns, the weirdos, the outcasts, the dreamers who aren't allowed to dream. And they're crying, the tough ones too. Honeycutt, you just told my life. How do I do what you did? How do I do what he did? How do I do what Wyatt did? And I just wish I had a whole day just with those kids. And I want the counselor there because the counselor would say, oh my God, that kid cares. Yes, he cares. Yes, he cares. But someone finally told a story that included him or her and their dreams. Mm-hmm. And I opened a spot up. Now I want to do an evening in the gym where we get granular. How do we invest in your dreams? Here's 15 ideas. Hey, teachers, you know those things that you think aren't teaching? They are teaching. You know your dreams you haven't given up on that you have never brought to school? Bring them. Bring them. They need to hear your dreams, right?
Yeah.
So they need all of that. And we're living in a time when there's so much hate. There's so much outrage. People are living for that dopamine hit to be outraged. They're looking for outrage. Mm. And man, how do we counterbalance that?
And Mick, you talk about creating kinder cultures. We need to do that. I mean, you're right now. I mean, I'm sitting here going, oh, I want to go on stage with you. I want to go with you. And I want to help these kids. It's just, they're everywhere needing, they're hungry for it. And it's that point where we can see it and teachers are in a position where they need someone to get that, the juice is flowing, get them feeling again like they matter. It's,
you know, isn't that fun? When you're talking to, and this happens, my friend Ben Redrud is a speaker who talks to kids and he's doing that in Minnesota right now with 3,500 kids in a gym.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what we do. I don't like that huge number sometimes, but we can do that number. I've done 5,000 in Michigan. It's huge, huge district stuff. But wow. Here's the beautiful part. When you're talking to lots of kids, the teachers come and they're sitting on the edges and they think it's for the kids and they don't realize that you've got a Trojan horse message that's going to designed to get all the way through their shields and hit them in the heart and remind them of the beautiful thing that we have here called life and the limited number of heartbeats we have to write on this world with beautiful ink. And the teachers get inspired and they come up and go, I know you're talking to kids today, but I needed that. I needed that. I lost my mojo during COVID and it never came back. And they're crying. The teacher's crying.
Oh, yeah. The teachers had it tough.
They're my friend now. I got a friend named Matt Ocken. I say his name wrong. I think I met him in the Dakotas. I'm not sure. Out in the wilds, maybe Wyoming. I'll have to go and look on Facebook. All I know is he's my friend now. And he's been my friend since I was there. I don't know, 2 years ago. I collect these people who just, they don't go away because they need to be part of something, you know, bigger. And a lot of times I find that there are educators out there and kids who are very isolated and alone, even though they're in a school every day, the people who are surround them don't know them. I don't know why, but they're detached retinas in this world. And when they find their people, and that's the beautiful part is I'm getting to an age now. And I know that's you too. That's this podcast. That's you asking people what their why is. We weave tapestries of beautiful people. We can't not do that. And we add beads and we add filigree and we put it on the wall and we look at it and we admire it. And then we tell the whole world to see it. We help people see what they should have saw in the first place. That's the gift of getting older is that we know how important that is. When you're younger, you're just living it. You are the thread in the tapestry, but we can see the tapestry. You know, we can weave those things.
You know, I call myself a story weaver. Did you know that?
No. Isn't that cool?
That's so weird that you brought that up. It's because to me, it's all about the connections and the way you connect is you open up the door with the stories. And my new book is Grow Your Why. It's all about one story at a time. So my new one that's coming out, it's all about the stories. It's all about the connections. It's all about touching people's hearts and letting them know that they matter and that they can connect with you. I'm so glad you're on my porch, but I think I'm running out of time.
Can people come back to your porch or is it a one-time thing?
Oh no, I'm going to have to get you back. This is just amazing. Here I want to do is just want to be able to pull one thing that you didn't mention. I mentioned it in the beginning about you being a musician and songwriter. You still, when you're up on that stage, don't you bring your music also?
I do. I never travel without a guitar. And I find it's a conversational lubricant. And people will say, you know, people know I'm not some Juilliard. I can't even read music. I've never used music as a way to make me better than somebody else. I've always been the jukebox to get everyone to sing. I care more about karaoke than trying to act like I'm some version of, you know, some performer. That's not what it's about. It's about getting people to loosen up and have fun. Yeah. I always bring a student up on stage and I put them on an instrument like you were playing those drums on the floor back at ISTE. There's always a kid on stage. And if you go through my YouTube videos, you'll find those moments. And I ask the counselor, do you have a kid that really needs a rock star moment? And they know exactly who that is.
Aww.
I just recently, I was out in this community, oh my gosh, in rural Kansas. And I got this girl. And again, all I knew is the superintendent said, you need this girl. I get her up on stage and I get her to sing. We're doing some country song and I'm playing guitar with her. And then superintendent contacts me about a month later. And that girl who no one knew could sing, no one knew would sing, I was singing the national anthem at the big game.
Oh my gosh.
She's interviewed by the local newspaper, which I have here. It's this little county newspaper. And she said, a speaker came to our school and he made me think that I could. And now I want to be a musician and I want to be a singer. And that's what she's now putting her whole thing into. And that was 1 hour. 1 hour. So to me, it's like, You can change the world in 1 hour. That's my why. That's your why. This podcast here. I mean, maybe someone's listening and they're going, oh my God, I needed to hear this. I want to go further. And I want to invite anyone listening. Look, I'm Kevin Honeycutt, H-O-N-E-Y, like B Honey, C-U-T-T, on every social platform. That's Threads, that's TikTok, that's Facebook, that's YouTube, that's Instagram. Look, I'm in all these places because the kids that I talk to are in all those places. And if I'm not there too, then I'm talking out the side of my head and I'm not where they are. So I have to live in those places. And I share my message everywhere. I don't wait for perfect because perfect is the enemy of done. I do my guitar lessons and I don't care if you like them and I don't care if you think I'm good enough. I don't care. There's a line from a movie, A River Runs Through It. I'm going to paraphrase. And it's about the arrogance of professionalism, where he says, my dad was of the opinion that any man that wasn't smart enough to catch a trout should ever be allowed to disgrace a trout by catching one. And you know what I think that says is that there are some, what did I say? There's some people who stand in the way of people getting to do their dreams because they're not good enough. You know, they're the Simon Cowells of the world. And I'm over here saying, do it anyway. Viva la revolution. Do it anyway.
Do it anyway.
Don't wait for permission.
I'll tell you, Kevin, as a perfectionist, I've been really working on that because the whole idea is just do it. Just do it. Everyone makes mistakes and you learn from them. And this idea of bringing that girl on stage and how it changed her life, probably. You know what I mean? It's, oh, you touched my heart. You just made my day.
You too. Just getting back in touch again. And I want to keep going with this. I feel like, you know, here we are. Okay. Barbara, we're on a raft and we're headed toward the waterfall. And it's a beautiful waterfall, but it is the one we all go over. And we only have so much time between the river and the waterfall. And the roar of the water is getting louder. So you can stop and you can get depressed and you can be sad. You can paddle toward the falls and get there quicker. Or you could look around and say, all the kids I work with and all the teachers I work with are on rafts too. And they're all headed toward the same falls. How do I make the best out of the heartbeats I have left? How do I turn and talk to all the other rafts and say, hey, everyone, let's do this beautifully. Let's make sure the kids way back there really enjoy the ride and that no one's afraid. No one's afraid that we're going to be okay. But this is our chance. This is our time on the face of this earth. You know, someone's going to dig us up 10,000 years from now and wonder why we had an iPhone or all of that. But right now, we're not artifacts. Right now, we're real. This is our time. Kids, teachers, darn it. Yes, I hear the water too. I do. Let's make music out of it. Let's make it the soundtrack. And let's do something bigger than being afraid of the falls.
Wow. Okay. You just made me cry. Kevin. And I was going to ask you to tell how people could reach you, and you did it without me. I just think you're amazing. And thank you so much for being on my porch. I just love this.
I want to write a chapter in one of your books. You've heard me enough to be reminded now who I am, and the fidelity of my message hasn't really changed, you know, and I don't think yours has it either. But if you say, Kevin, can you write a foreword? Or, of course. Are you kidding me? Anytime, sister. You're family to me, and you will always will be family to me.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you for this beautiful, I just love this conversation, but I also feel like, you know, we haven't done this like this. And no.
What is it? 20, 15?
Way too many years. No, much more than that.
I'm not sure even at events we've ever taken the time.
Well, we're so busy running around, you know, doing all the things we need to do at the event. So we're going to do more of this, but thank you so much. And I sure hope people reach out to you and you can, we're going to make a post that goes with this. So anything you want to put on there, even the books you mentioned, and maybe if you have your songs, if you want to share some of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. Selfishly, yes, I would, of course, love to.
Oh, let's just put them up there and let people see and hear you and then link to all your websites and everything, because I just love you. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, my friend. I love you forever.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning Podcast and my conversation with Kevin Honeycutt. I love it that he believes that every child needs to be seen, heard, and valued. You know, I've known Kevin a long time and have always enjoyed how he shares stories of what brings us power and joy. I love the music. I love what he shares. So make sure you check out the blog post that goes with this podcast. And it's on my website, barbarabray.net. You'll learn about more about Kevin's journey, and he gives a lot of links and resources and many that inspire kids. So please share our conversation with your friends. It'd be awesome if you subscribe to my podcast. I'd be so grateful if you wrote a review. Thanks again for listening, and keep sharing your story. And please stay safe and be well.